welcome to the December 17th, 2021 episode of Cibus Pacem Patibellum. My name is Rob Adams. I am a retired United States Navy Chief Petty Officer, and my oath of enlistment will expire when I do. I am an American, a patriot, and an activist. I am neither a Republican nor a Democrat. No political party dictates my vote, nor my thinking. I reserve the right to think for myself. I believe in the saying, "In God I trust, all others verify." As my dad taught me, don't believe everything you read and only half of what you hear. I do not trust anyone that expects me to believe them simply because they say something or they have a bunch of letters behind their name. You can have a PhD and still be a frappin' idiot. I am more apt to trust someone that provides references to their source material, well, unless, of course, the facts they are stating are blatantly obvious. You know, blue sky, water wet. Or they at least challenge me to check their facts. I believe in critical thinking, not critical race. I believe our rights are given to us by God and not by any government, though historically governments try to limit or take those God-given rights away. Cibus Pacem Patibellum is a Latin adage that means, if you want peace, prepare for war. This implies that a society that is prepared for war is less likely to be attacked. This is episode 3, where I'm going to discuss the COVID damn plan scamdemic. I need to explain a little bit more about my military background just to add a little more credibility to what I'm about to say, and the upcoming episodes regarding this whole COVID scam. I spent the better part of my naval career with the Naval Enlisted Classification, or NEC, of 4811, Master Damage Control Training Specialist. A component NEC of that 4811 is NEC 4805, which is Chemical, Biological, Radiological Defense Operations and Training Specialist. I graduated the top of every class I took in that field. Now, I'm not bragging, I'm not some super intellectual. I merely say this because in the field of weapons of mass destruction, for whatever reason, they intrigued the hell out of me, and they still do. And aside from all the classified briefings and trainings, I soaked up everything I could find on the field, and I'm actually a published author in the field. All right, enough on me. It is my intent in these podcasts to avoid the politics involved. I will try, but we'll see. It is my intent to simply put out facts and trust that you will use your own common sense and logic and critical thinking to draw your own conclusions. I am not going to argue the origin of this virus, quote-unquote virus. I am going to argue our response to it. Now, before I get started, I want to make clear that I believe there is something out there that is causing this disease called COVID-19, and it has taken lives just like any other virus before it has done. But there are three points I wish to make. I took the fourth one out. That's going to be its own podcast. Number one, how deadly this virus is not. It is the treatment for the virus that is killing people. Number two, masks don't protect you from it. And number three, social distancing is a frickin' joke. All right, this virus is no more deadly than any other influenza or cold caused by a coronavirus. Yeah, a lot of people, most people don't know that any one of several coronaviruses causes about one-third of all colds and flus every year. We've known this fact since coronaviruses were first identified back in the 1960s. The flu shot that millions of people get every year, it probably has one or more different coronaviruses in it. And originally, when this chimera called COVID-19 of a virus was released, it was the elderly and those with compromised immune systems that were at the greatest risk. But let's look historically. Haven't the elderly and immune compromised always been the most susceptible to the flu, pneumonia? The young and healthy individuals are not at risk. I'm not saying they can't catch the flu. Lord knows I had it when I was a kid. But their odds of dying from it are practically non-existent. Now, if you were to do 5 minutes of research online and apply even a modicum of critical thinking, you would come to the same conclusion. At the time I was writing this podcast, yeah, I do a script ahead of time to keep me from going off on too much of a tangent. But according to worldometers.com, the COVID statistics for the world, U.S., and 4 other countries I compared. Now, this is as of December 14th, I pulled these numbers. The world population is 7,913,447,000. The number of COVID cases globally was 271,725,553. That gives us an infection rate in percentage of population of 3.43%. 3.43% of the world's population has tested, quote-unquote, positive for COVID. I'll get into the tests here in a little bit. Out of those 271,725,553, 5,336,773 have died with a COVID-related death. Okay, let's not say they died from COVID. I'll get to this in a minute. But let's say they had COVID when they died, but COVID was not necessarily the cause of their death. Okay. So, the percentage of positively tested people that have come down with COVID or tested positive for COVID and actually died from COVID is only 1.96%. 1.96%. The number of people that have died with COVID, not necessarily from COVID, compared to the world population is 0.07%. All right, now let's get to the United States. At the time I took these numbers down, December 14th, the population in this country was 338,802,450. We had 51,136,442 cases. That gives us an infection rate, the percentage of population, of 15.09%, way above the world average. And according to the statistics, as of that date, we had 821,335 people die from COVID or a COVID-related death. Again, I'll get to that in a little bit. Well, that's 1.61%, which is below the global average by 0.35%. Now, the percentage of population that has died with COVID, I got to specify that with and from difference, was 0.24%, which is a little over 3 times the world average. And there's a logical explanation for that that I will get to in just a minute. All right. So, if the data, meaning the facts, disrupt or disagree with your worldview, I hate to tell you, the facts are not going to change. The facts are, globally, the survival rate for COVID is 98.04%. The survival rate is slightly higher, in the U.S., is slightly higher at 98.39%. All right, some interesting points to look at are the infection rates. Globally, according to this data source, worldometers.com, only 3.43% of the world's population has contracted COVID-19. This would suggest that this, quote, highly contagious, unquote, virus ain't so contagious. Now, I realize there are several factors that can come into play here. Not everyone gets tested. I haven't been tested. I'm not going to get tested. There's no currently existing reliable test. Mainstream media is not covering this, but the CDC is pulling the emergency use authorization for the PCR test on December 31st because it, quote, returns too many false positives, end quote. It cannot differentiate between COVID-19 and the flu, regular, ordinary flu. Now, many can argue that the infection rate is higher than the data reports because not everyone is tested. Yet, when in the history of modern medicine, in my 60 years of life, have we ever mass tested the population with a faulty test, whether they were exhibiting symptoms of a disease or not? Never. This is a first. So why are they doing it? Again, I'm not going to get into the politics. I have my own opinion. You draw your own. But I have to ask, does your doctor do a strep test just for shits and giggles every time you go in and see the doc? You go in to get a physical. Do they run every test under the sun? Do they take that 8-inch-long plastic probe and try to tickle your brain through your sinuses with it every time you go in? No, only when you are exhibiting symptoms of a possible flu or whatever. I don't get a TB test every time I go get a physical. So why all of a sudden are we trying to test every person again with a faulty test? The guy who invented the PCR test in a video back in 2019 before he mysteriously died, put out a video. You could find it on YouTube for a while. I still don't know if it's there. I don't spend a whole lot of time on YouTube. But he sat there and said, this thing cannot be used to test for viruses. It's not a test. It is a means of multiplying a small sample of genetic material so that you can run a DNA test on it. Okay, fine. Let's say they do that. There are over, 12,000 amino acid pairs in the DNA chain of the coronavirus. The PCR test is only testing for about, 200? So 15%? Okay, well, what other organisms contain that same 200 base pairs? If you don't understand what I'm talking about, base pairs, just do a quick look at a DNA, the double helix chain. The base pair is each side of the link in that screwing chain. That's what helix means. All right, so now we have to, coming back to the United States having such a high percentage of COVID cases, are you aware that the initial positive test was not the only one that went towards the count in the new cases column? Any subsequent positive test on the same infected person also got added to that column. Common sense and logic, therefore, dictate that the actual number of cases in this country is a lot lower than reported. As for the number of deaths, the United States has a slightly higher death rate than most other countries. But if you go look at the CDC's website, and it's still up, you can easily find how the numbers in the U.S. are skewed and exaggerated. The CDC, earlier this year, reported that only 6% of the deaths reported in the United States were from COVID-19 alone. The other 94% of COVID-related deaths, they had an average of 2.6 comorbidities. And obesity and diabetes led that list. So that means of those 94, that, that 94% of those that died with COVID-19, not from COVID-19. If you look at the CDC's guidelines on our website, it'll show you that a physician has only to suspect an individual was carrying COVID-19 at the time of death to be able to list it as a contributing cause of death. A positive test is preferred, but it is not required. I'm going to exaggerate an example here. You know, a guy laying on an emergency room gurney with a steering wheel stuck out of his chest, and the doc goes, well, he probably had trouble breathing, so we'll add COVID-19 as a contributing cause. That's all they had to do. Bear in mind, just like any other microbe, someone can be carrying it but not be sick with it. At any given time, we're all carrying a host of viruses and bacteria in our bodies, but our immune system is keeping them in check. Okay, let me give you a prime example here. Ladies, vaginal yeast, it's there 24/7. 52 weeks a year. You start taking antibiotics and you start killing the natural flora, and that vaginal yeast can take over and you wind up with a yeast infection. Okay, we carry this stuff with us 24 hours a day, 364 and a quarter days a year, except leap year, which is 365. HIV is probably the most common example. A person can be HIV positive but not have the illness caused by it, which we know as AIDS. Now let's look at the actual mortality rates, okay, and compare them to a few years. The mortality rate in the United States in 2020 was in line with the projected mortality rate that it was expected to be. In fact, there were fewer deaths in 2020 than were forecast. If you look at macrotrends.net, all one word, macrotrends, the percentage of increase between the years 2018 and 2019 was 1.12%. The actual death rate in 2018 was 8.685. In 2019, it was 8.782. An increase in the death rate of 0.097. This is per 100,000 people. The percentage of increase between 2019 and 2020 was the same as that between 2018 and 2019 at 1.12%. The actual death rate was 8.80 for an increase of over 2019 of 0.108. Now, let's compare those percentage increases to, let's say, 2014 at 1.29%. 2015 and 2016, both at 1.27%. 2017 at 1.24%. Between 2017 and 2018, it was an increase of 1.220%. So the percent death rate is actually going down. Now, these mortality rates that are reported at MacroTrends are from all causes. So if the COVID deaths were so high in 2020, why hasn't the percentage of change been higher? Right now, we are actually at 1.09% over last year. So if the COVID deaths, I already asked that. If all of these COVID deaths are above and beyond the natural death rate, as we have been led to believe by that little counter that was on the bottom of every news station, why is the percentage of change the same as the previous year and less than the previous 5 years? You have to ask, what manner of natural death was replaced by all these COVID deaths? From what natural cause of death did people stop dying to not make these COVID deaths an excess? for the death rate percentage to remain the same as 2019, with all those excessive COVID deaths, then certainly people had to stop dying from other causes, right? If you dig into the CDC statistics, you will see that far fewer people died of influenza during 2020 than in all other recorded flu seasons. And remember that gold standard COVID test, the PCR test, cannot differentiate between COVID and influenza. Not my words, not my opinions, it's the CDC's own statements. All right, now the treatment of COVID is just as novel as the virus itself. Since when did doctors tell sick patients that tested positive for COVID to go home, isolate, and when you can't breathe, come back? When has the medical industry not practiced early treatment or intervention? Doctors used to look at a patient and do their best to treat the symptoms. Not COVID. There's no early intervention or any treatment. As a matter of fact, medications that could knock COVID out in the majority of people were vilified, and any doctor that spoke out in favor of them was belittled or even had their license revoked. Hydrochloroquine, ivermectin, medications that have a long history of safe use were mocked. News stations and big pharma broadcast how these medications were dangerous, even when the documented history of use and effectiveness proved to the contrary. Ivermectin, labeled as a horse dewormer, when it actually won a Nobel Prize as a medication for the treatment of viral infections in humans. In humans. Hydrochloroquine, causing heart issues, when it's been used for decades upon decades as an anti-malarial drug, without heart issues. Pharmacists have refused to fill prescriptions for these medications. In other words, the pharmacist, even though you have a prescription written by a licensed medical doctor, is now practicing medicine without a license. Governors have banned the use of these effective and inexpensive medications in their states. Why? Again, doctors speaking out on the efficacy of these drugs and the need for early intervention are censored, demonized, or have their license taken away. Why? The majority of the doctors speaking out against the World Health Organization and CDC dictated treatment for COVID are in private practice. They are not an integral part of some corporate medical industry. If you look at the CDC website and search for Table 2E, that's either CDC or FDA, I can't remember which one, which of their websites, you will see that ivermectin is listed as the number two preferred drug for treating COVID. All right. The WHO and CDC dictated treatment for COVID. Their dictated treatment is what is killing COVID patients. Oh, go home till you can't breathe, then come in and we'll pump you full of the number one drug for the treatment of COVID, and when your lungs start to fail, we'll slap you on a ventilator until you die. That's how it works. The number one drug for the treatment of COVID is called remdesivir. Table 2E now lists remdesivir as FDA approved, but earlier in the scamdemic, it was under an emergency use authorization. All right, so it's a little time for a little history lesson on remdesivir. All right, remdesivir was developed by Fauci, and it did not even complete its first and only medical trial. It was pulled from the trial after it killed, I believe, it was over half of the patients in the trial. Remdesivir causes renal or kidney failure. When the kidneys fail, your body cannot get rid of excess fluids. Therefore, your body will, obviously, retain fluid. That fluid has to go somewhere. All right. The leading cause of deaths of COVID patients was called COVID-induced pneumonia. What is the layman's definition of pneumonia? It's a fluid buildup in the lungs. What does renal failure lead to? Fluid buildup in the lungs. What does remdesivir lead to? Fluid buildup in the lungs. So I don't know about you, but I can see a direct correlation between the WHO, WHO, and CDC dictated treatment and deaths due to COVID. It's called murder. Now, who in the hell gave the WHO and CDC power and control over our doctors? Why did the AMA sign on with them? That's the American Medical Association. How are they dictating the medical care for a patient that they have never even seen? Why are what I refer to as corporate doctors violating their Hippocratic Oath and letting someone else tell them how to treat their patients? As I heard one doctor say, they're either being played or paid. These are just questions to make you think. But I'm not going to go down the entire financial gain rabbit hole. But I'd bet my bottom dollar there's big money involved. On the issue of masks, well, bottom line, they don't work. Matter of fact, they put you at greater risk for opportunistic respiratory infections. Not my words, not my opinions. Do a little research. Matter of fact, go check out Fauci's paper that he wrote about the Spanish flu. Most people are unaware that the masking is under an emergency use authorization, just like the vaccines. No, the vaccines currently in use in this country are not FDA approved, but that's the next episode. In the field of industrial hygiene, a mask wearer has to have a pulmonary function test, a medical screening, and training on the use of the mask they are going to be using. Even doctors, surgeons, nurses receive training on the masks they wear. Did anyone out here get a PFT, pulmonary function test, a medical screening, or proper training from an OSHA-approved course before slapping that face diaper on? Nope, I sure didn't. But then again, I'm not wearing one. For one simple reason, they cannot stop a virus. Now, we need a little history on coronaviruses to lay the groundwork for my anti-mask sentiment. COVID-19 is probably the first time 99% of the world had ever even heard of coronavirus. The fact is, they were first identified some 60 years ago. Of the known coronaviruses, and there are quite a few, only a few are able to cause illness in humans. SARS or SARS-CoV-1, MERS, Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, are probably the most heard of before this chimera, SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19. All coronaviruses, regardless of which one they are treated as a biosafety level 3. Right, there are four biosafety levels, one being the least dangerous and four being the most dangerous. Four would be Ebola, Marburg, highly contagious, highly lethal. The pathogens are classified as 1 through 4 based upon such things as infectability, method of transmission, and for a more simple term, lethality. These are by no means all considerations, but they meet the needs for this discussion. Coronaviruses are studied in a laboratory meeting biosafety level 3 standards. A few well-known biosafety level 3 agents are West Nile virus, yellow fever, tuberculosis, just to name a few that most people have heard of. Now, a biosafety level 3 lab has a few design specifications all on its own. Has to have sustained directional airflow. In other words, air must come from a clean area and flow towards a potentially contaminated area. Workers in a biosafety level 3 lab will be required to wear the standard PPE, in other words, face shields, solid front wraparound gowns. And any work on a microbe, like COVID, must be done in a biosafety cabinet. That's that cabinet you've seen on some of these crime scene shows where or movies or TV shows where they have their arms through these attached rubber glove arms inside a cabinet that has its own independent airflow. It must be done in one of those cabinets, and the technicians in there will probably be wearing an approved N95 type respirator. Now, the KN95 or the N95 face diaper is not a respirator. A respirator is fitted to the wearer. It has a silicone type body that seals against the face and has replaceable cartridges. It is not a face mask. Understand the difference. Respirator, face mask. If you read the print on a box of commercially bought face masks, you might see the words, does not protect against the COVID-19 virus. No face mask does. The N95 face mask is 95% effective at filtering out particles down to 0.3 microns, or to translate it over, 300 nanometers. The COVID-19 virus has a diameter of at most 100 nanometers. So, three virus cells can pass through each pore in an N95 face mask. At 0.3 microns, there's a lot of pores in that face mask. The argument that has been put forth is that the virus attaches itself to the moisture in your breath. And I'm not arguing that. It does. The virus will, it'll be in the moisture in your breath. But they're implying that that means, oh, the mask is going to catch it. All right, I want you to do a common sense test. Put a face diaper on, walk out in the real cold weather, and exhale. If you can still see your breath, it's not stopping the virus. The breath you are seeing in that cold air is the moisture in your breath. I'm not saying it doesn't trap any of those virus particles, but it's not going to stop all the virus particles. Okay? A study reported or referenced in an article in the New England Journal of Medicine, which has mysteriously disappeared from their website this year, stated that face masks were only effective in the symptomatic from spreading a virus when sneezing or coughing, as it would trap gross amounts of phlegm, in other words, they're blowing snot, when they cough or hack or sneeze. They provide no significant benefit for the asymptomatic or the not ill person. Fauci himself stated the exact same thing in an email to Sylvia Burwell, who was the Obama-era Secretary of Health and Human Services, in February this year. Quote, Sylvia, masks are really for infected people to prevent them from spreading infection to the uninfected, rather than protecting uninfected people from acquiring infections. The mask you buy in the drugstore is not really effective in keeping out virus, which is small enough to pass through the material. It might, however, provide some slight benefit in keeping out gross droplets if someone coughs or sneezes on you. I do not recommend you wear a mask. End quote. This is Fauci himself, who originally came out and says, no, we don't need to mask up. And then we got to the point of what? Wearing 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 12 masks? All in the same face? The World Health Organization and the CDC released a report in May of 2020 that states, we did not find evidence that surgical-type face masks are effective in reducing laboratory-confirmed influenza transmission, either when worn by infected persons or by persons in the general community to reduce their susceptibility. Okay, you still feel safe with that face diaper on? It's not helping you. Social distancing. Oh, now this one's a joke. This one is so farcical that my grandchildren can figure it out. Imagine a virus so smart and so courteous that it won't bother you while you are eating and drinking. Restaurants requiring a mask to go from the door to your table, but not required while you're sitting at your table. Damn, that is one smart and courteous virus. Not going to bother you while you're eating, man. Go ahead. Just don't get up from that table. I'm going to get you. It's like common sense and critical thinking have flown the coop here. Trust the science, they tell us. I do trust the science, just not theirs. If their so-called science defies common sense and falls apart at even the most cursory application of critical thought, then it's not science. A virus that drops dead out of the air 1/100th of an inch beyond 6 feet. I'm sorry, I'm not buying what you're peddling. As my cell phone sometimes identifies phone calls. Scam likely. That's enough for now. Until next time, God bless, be safe, and watch your six.